much of what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty.
Welcome to the 4 o'clock hour show. This is Voices from the Frontline segment on KPFK 90.7 in Los Angeles and 98.7 in Santa Barbara. This is Damon Azali, and I'm here today with my co-host Tammy Bang Lu for today's show. At the top of the hour, we will have Will Corduroy and Stephanie Gilyou, two folks from Project South who are going to be talking to us about movement building in the South. And in our second segment, we will be talking about the Irish national liberation struggle, in particular the IRA hunger strike of the 1980s. We have Dr. Lawrence McCune, Irish Republican ex-prisoner who served 16 years in the H-Block prison when he was on hunger strike for 70 days. And he will be joining us on the line from Belfast, North Ireland. So first today we have Will and Stephanie in the studio. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
So we wanted to just to start off to give you a chance to talk about what Project South is and what you guys are trying to do.
Great. Well, I'll start. Project South is based in Atlanta, and our purpose is to provide leadership development in low-income communities of color in order to do grassroots organizing, particularly in the South. The strategy for which we do that is developing popular education tools and modules to support that grassroots organizing and those efforts on the ground.
Yeah, I would say at our least, we develop interesting workshops to educate about social movement building across the country and across the globe. And at best, we nurture leaders in the movement and help build stronger organizations that are connected to the big picture. That's what we're continually pushing on. We focus on organizers across the country, but specifically in the Southeast, to connect their local struggles to the larger systemic root causes of any problems that are happening.
So before we start getting into specifics, why don't you give our listeners a feel for what the conditions are like down in the South? What are the organizing conditions? Who are we dealing with here? Both the folks that you're targeting and the actual people that you are trying to address in your organizing.
Well, the South is black. It's communities of color, predominantly black, but black and Latino communities now. But the leadership traditionally in the South has been white, and you know, that's the type of environment that we have to work under. So what we do, particularly at Project South, is we do organize those communities, black communities and now communities, Latino communities, to do that kind of to help bring systemic change about in the South.
And another factor piece is the besides the obvious and complete segregation, not only in institutions of power, but also within the social justice movement. Another piece to that is age, I think. And whereas maybe on the West Coast there are more, and having lived on the West Coast for a number of years, there tends to be more youth consciousness and youth organizing. There's a tax on youth on the West Coast just as they are in the South, but it's slower to come. And because there has been a strong the civil rights movement and a strong base of power in the older generation, it's difficult to have that power be turned over and the leadership development happen amongst the youth that are growingly attacked and targeted based on the criminal justice system, economically, all of these things. And so one piece of Project South work is to focus on the youth, and we have developed a youth council that is specifically developing consciousness. They do their own popular education, and we're developing them as leaders so that they can lead their own movement within a very difficult situation in the South.
I'll also say that historically in the South, both movements and, you know, kind of repressive policies have the South has been the birthplace or the starting point for some of those things that have been the trend for the nation. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times our philosophy is the fact that, you know, as things happen in the South, it's typically a sign of what will be happening and what's starting to happen on a national level. So it's even more important to address those issues.
Well, I know in your intro you were talking about connecting, making connections to the larger picture. And I was reading your website earlier today, and it seems like you guys are pretty explicit about making those, at least starting to make those international links, trying to talk about the role of the U.S. government in a lot of these structures in terms of systematic oppression. So maybe you can speak a little bit more about what is that larger, that broader context you're trying to build to.
Sure, and the hard piece, I mean, we can be explicitly anti-imperialist, but what does that look like on the ground in terms of grassroots organizing to bring that, and I think that we're still developing that. We haven't figured out any answers, and we're looking to other organizations across the country to help develop those models of how to link local struggles to global conditions, to global patterns economically, demographically, all of those things, and it's tough. And one of our examples that we can talk about a little bit more is the living wage struggle. Just 3 to 4 years ago, we raised the minimum wage, or we were part of a coalition of people that raised the minimum wage from $3.25 an hour to $5.15 an hour, and then that set the stage to launch another campaign that was to develop a real living wage. That's $10.50 an hour based on with benefits based on the economic research for a family of three, and we fought for that. We have fought for that over the last 3 years with a coalition of 98 to 100 organizations in the Atlanta area only as a city fight.
Oh, wow.
And pressured the city council enough so that 9 folks of the 12 had sponsored the living wage ordinance and were set poised to pass this legislation. And within 2 weeks, the Chamber of Commerce, Delta Airlines, and opponents in the state legislature had a bill that has preempted any living wage ordinance on a city, local, county level. And that, to me, in terms of trying to define what corporate globalization looks like, whether or not you use that term, that's what it is. That local sovereignty is stripped. That they can preempt something like that within a few weeks, that they can counter something that we've worked on for years. And it just shows us, I think, the need for a very strong grassroots base and how to build that. And we're going to have to do a very deep evaluation process of what are the places that we can jump in and where did we lose a little bit of ground. How can we talk about this struggle with people, with low-income folks? They're right in there. They know it. That's right. But they're definitely not folks targeted by any of the global justice fights that are going on. There's a separation there, and we're hoping to provide a role that links that up so that they can see their struggle in a global context.
So you're talking about organizing in the South and building that grassroots base. What does it actually look like? I mean, here in Los Angeles, I organize with the Bus Riders Union, and being that L.A. is really segregated, and with the kind of breakdown of the heavy industries, one of the main forms is that we get on the buses and talk to, I mean, predominantly 86% of bus riders are working class, black, Latino, Asian, taking home a family income of $12,000 a year. So in terms of Atlanta, like, what are the methods that you're using, and how are you organizing?
Well, Atlanta's also very segregated. Mm-hmm. You know, it's predominantly black population, but there are migrants from the north who have come down as far as business. But one of the things that we've decided to do to help address those issues and to help make that connection to larger pictures is that there's a dire need for grassroots leadership development. You know, we provide that to communities of color in Atlanta.
Well, like the organization downstairs from us, which is one of our longtime partners, is the Georgia Citizens Coalition on Hunger. They have a thrift store, they have a hunger hotline, and we've worked with them. So there's folks coming in all the time. There's a large community that survives and needs these basic services. But our partnership with them and their amazing, sophisticated way of organizing links those folks that come in for basic needs to struggles like the Living Wage Campaign, or longer term questions of like, okay, there's poverty and there's some needs today. You gotta eat. But let's talk about why there's poverty and that it's not your fault and that it is larger systemic things. And that's sort of where we come in and can do some of that political education that prepares folks to launch into campaigns and political work that they've been, you know, disenfranchised from. That's one site. I mean, there's many sites. Our coworker, Christy Ketchum, works with the youth and is at the high schools just directly all the time, working with teachers and working directly with the students to develop relationships and develop alliances. One piece of what we're finding in the South in terms of dynamics is this explosion of the Latino population in the community, and very much pitted against the Black community and the Latino community, pitted against each other by the elites, and how can we start to build that relationship? And we wanted to dive into that with the youth and through some different high school contacts and relationships that we have. So that looks like going there every day, every week, developing those relationships, being there, being present, and creating workshops together. And so workshops that examine history of the Latino population, history of the African-American population, and how they link, how they're parallel, why they're different, some of the political background and social movement history that nobody gets in the schools. And then they become leaders themselves and start to model, I think, what leadership and organizing can look like. And we take a lot of direction from the youth themselves, which is part of our understanding of leadership development.
So you're listening to KPFK 90.7 in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. This is Damon Azali with Tambang Lu. And then also we have Stephanie Gil-Yu in the studio, and also Will Cordery from Project South, talking about movement building. And Stephanie, you were just talking about the kind of contradiction between Black and Latino, just even building kind of a united front there. And a lot of that relates a lot to what we've been trying to figure out for a long time on the buses of Los Angeles, where there is, you know, when we're on the buses saying, you know, what do we want to actually fight for? Who are we trying to pressure? And it's basically MTA, who is basically taking money from the bus lines that serve predominantly oppressed nationality folks, poor folks, and then giving it to the rail contractors, giving it to the corporations. And even with that, there's always the, well, you know, it's the Latino people, that's why it's crowded, or, you know, it's the Black people, that's why it's crowded. But it's not really that connection to the bigger issue. So that's, everybody could, I guess the, sorry, there's a little technical thing in my headphones here. So I guess the question that I wanted to ask is, since a lot of the stuff is coming out of the history of how the country has kind of changed in terms of more equity, more rights for oppressed nationality peoples, has come a lot out of, you know, the sit-ins from SNCC to the civil rights movement on down the line. And I wanted to get your take on the civil rights movement and the particular leadership there, and how that is dealing with this Black Latino contradiction, because I think a lot it's going to have to kind of move how things have been talking about it, because it's not just a Black thing only, even though when we look at the history of it, it's been a lot of kind of Black led movements that have helped open rights for other people and other and spaces for people. But the American Indian movement, a whole bunch of kind of liberation movement, have also helped that. So I'm just trying to see how, if you have experience on that, on the present day, what do you see that playing? How do you see that contradiction playing out in terms of the leadership?
What I've seen is a real inspiring piece is the work that Jobs with Justice is doing in Atlanta on a local level. And they have taken up the call for Latino immigrants and all immigrants receiving driver's license, for the privileges of driver's license and the benefits that are the necessities that are related to driver's license, taking up that piece as defined by the immigrant population really across the country with the Immigrant Freedom Ride that happened last fall. And the Jobs with Justice, which is primarily a black group in Atlanta at this point, is starting to figure out how to work with that and see it as a civil rights issue and connect it to the history and connect those histories straightforward. And we try to do that as well in terms of looking at the history of the civil rights movement and the history of Latino empowerment movements across the country and seeing the linkages and trying to. But again, I think that we see Project South sees the real motivation and the potential in the youth and in the younger folks that are developing these relationships at a different place, you know, and within the political climate that is today, rather than always kind of focusing back on past victories, but focusing on what needs to be done in this particular climate and moment.
Which, well, in our work at the Strategy Center, I mean, we think a lot about developing leaders and developing consciousness as an intergenerational fight.
Right.
So not just that, you know, we're talking about training young organizers, young as early as, I mean, youth, but young people, because we more train 17, 18, 19, all the way to 30, 40, 70, Grandma Kim's 82, right, some of our key leaders. So in terms of, you've talked a lot about the building leadership. How do you guys think about the role of leadership? And, I mean, there's many multiple models of organizing. One prominent one out there is that organizers are just facilitators, right? That you basically go in with no agenda. And if you're imposing agenda, then it's like if you have an agenda, it's imposed, right? I mean, we at the Strategy Center really think about the role of the conscious organizers where everybody has an agenda. It's not neutral, right? We're coming in and you're trying to build something. And our agenda is that we are trying to redistribute wealth back to working class communities. We're trying to build the leadership of black, Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, immigrant women. So in terms of the work in Project South, how do you guys think about your leadership development? And how do you think about the role of the organizer?
I definitely would say that the role of leadership for us is to develop other leaders. And I mean, and also to take on that role of educating your base and organizing your base, but to also, you know when you have a very educated, very cohesive base behind you that you pass on or you move on, and let that base be just as much of a leadership as the initial leadership was.
I think that's one piece. I think that we would say the same thing, that there's no objective organizer, and our popular education isn't by no means objective. It comes from a very particular political understanding and perspective that is fairly radical, and it is always puts. But how we understand radical, one piece of it is maybe an ideology, and another piece of it is that hearing and understanding and incorporating lived experience of people and the history that they have brought to bear on the history that develops, you know, on its own supposedly, that is radical as well, and that those two hand in hand are going to be what strengthens the movement. That there's a political perspective, yes, and there's also a base of people with their experience, and those two things together, that fires the world. I mean, that's what's going to, I think, create transformation.
You guys have been talking a lot about popular education. Obviously, folks that know Project South know you for your popular education, your toolkits, the timeline that people have used. And so give us give us a feel for what are some specific examples of tools that you use in your popular education from your timeline to different.
One of my favorites, and then maybe you can throw in one of your favorites, is the anatomy of a movement exercise that we do, and we do it with all different groups. We do it with youth, we do it with older folks, we do it with mixed groups, we do it with everybody. And we'll dissect a particular moment. And for example, the Montgomery bus boycott is one of the best examples of a movement that developed by women specifically. There's a lot of mishistory in the Montgomery bus boycott. A lot of people don't know the details, and the details are the exciting part. The, you know, just even that domestic violence went down throughout the entire time of the boycott because people, the anger and the rage was not being, that had gotten built up through the degrading process of riding the buses, went down because they were doing this amazing community project together. And that little detail, you know, is so hopeful, so inspiring to me. And so we use the lessons from a movement like that to talk about and to link directly to our movement today. How are we bringing these lessons in, or how are we not, and therefore not making as much ground or creating as much change as we've seen in the past? So that's one exercise that I love to do because it talks about the head and the eyes and the hands and the heart of a movement, and that it's that those things are integrated and a piece of us, so we can see ourselves in it.
And that's also, it's a conscious thing, because I remember me growing up listening, you know, Rosa Parks was tired, whatever. It didn't say anything about she was attached to the NAACP, that she was trained at Highlander School, that there was not only, you know, it wasn't just kind of a Martin Luther King, even though he was, you know, had a particular role in it, but it was this grassroots movement that held out for 13 months to get folks, you know.
And that his leadership came later, you know, and that the bus boycott had been planned 5 years in advance and had looked at Baton Rouge and some Louisiana examples to even create their own. So that a defeat in the past created the success of that, you know, and that we can see our own defeats as potentially leading towards greater victories in the future.
And not only that MLK's leadership was later on, but the fact that it had been spearheaded by women of color political group. The Women's Political Council is the one who pulled together the boycott. So, I mean, that's also actually my favorite kind of pop-ed tool that we use. Another one that we do is, you know, we have many, many timelines that incorporate, you know, social, economic, and political histories and social movement history throughout our country. And, you know, we use that tool not only to educate people about those particular pieces of history, but to also, again, like what Stephanie said, link their personal lived experiences to those broader political pieces of U.S. history.
Okay. So I have a question about something that's coming up in November. I'm sure it's on a lot of people's minds, particularly KPFK folks. The elections, Bush, Kerry, trying to figure out, You know, people who have been listening to Voices from Our Minds have heard how we've kind of, you know, want to just get rid of Bush, but also really being complex and nuanced about what Kerry represents and how he is also dangerous, and how the day after the election, if he does win, he's the kind of next target. So wanted to see how you kind of incorporated this kind of November date coming up into your popular education and the work that they're doing.
Actually, you know, part of our curriculum is that we develop these toolkits for people to use in their organizing efforts, their grassroots efforts, and one of which that we're developing right now is about redefining democracy for a social movement, a social justice movement, and the name of it is "It Ain't Just About a Vote," and because to us, to really get involved in this process of you know, really looking at Kerry and Bush and, you know, getting people to the polls is so tactical, it's so short term, and not really looking at the broader scope of what's really happening in this country. So, you know, we don't have anything directly linked to the November elections. However, we do have this curriculum for people to think broader about what that vote really means and what democracy really should look like for them, because regardless of who wins, democracy hasn't been gained.
I mean, obviously, I mean, but there's some nuance in that. I mean, if you're asking Chavez in Venezuela, do they care if Bush is reelected, or if Bush and Kerry gets in? I mean, even North Korea, I mean, third world nations that are directly under attack, they know. Clearly, we don't want Bush. They know that they're going to, I mean, we're well aware, even at the Strategy Center, that the strategy is to defeat Bush. But even if one of the tactical strategic maneuvers is to elect Kerry, that once November hits, and if Kerry's elected, then we're going to need to fight the Democratic Party, right? I mean, not necessarily. I mean, there's just going to be challenges in being able to push them as far as they can go, but also talk about the nuances of Kerry's campaign and what's he saying in terms of Iraq, in terms of really beginning to take on the prison systems or any of these things that we, as issues that we want to focus on.
So we have about a minute and a half left. Wanted to give you guys a chance to talk about stuff that you're doing, how people can plug in information.
Yeah. Well, definitely check out the website. It's www.projectsouth.org, and that's got information about all of our stuff. One piece of how we're interacting with the upcoming, everything, the election and how that's going to interact with all of us, is that we are creating something called the Midnight School, and we feel that the Midnight School is a place and time to bring national organizers together to talk about vision. So, okay, this is one piece that's a tactical moment, but we need to be thinking long term and thinking about how we are developing, how each tactic is within one particular strategy that is leading us to the world that we want. And so we feel like that's going to be a place where we can do that. Another place that we do that is through our Building a Movement skills retreats, and that's some place that people can plug into from all over the country.
And again, give us the website and the telephone number.
The website is www.projectsouth.org, and our phone number is 404-622-0602.
Okay, and thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
That was Stephanie and Will from Project South. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll be right back with Dr. Lawrence McEwen, someone who was a hunger striker for 70 days, to talk about the IRA hunger strikes in the 1980s. This is KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM.